Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. Dominique, how are you?
Very well, Vyash. It's nice to see you. Lots to talk
Yeah.
about.
Yes, likewise, lots to talk about. So I'll be filling in for Andrew this week. And as you mentioned, there was a lot happening. So why don't we kick right off? So obviously, we had the Fed this week, and I thought that might be a nice place to start. What jumped out for you, and what were your key takeaways?
Powell was more hawkish than I expected. I thought, he would refrain from providing any guidance on future decisions, and instead he indicated a pause. And I think it's probably because, well, of course, he has to deal with hawks. I don't. But also he has more confidence in growth than I do. If you look at the SCP description of skews of risk skews for core PC, unemployment and growth, you can see that the FOMC sees slightly less downside, sorry, upside risk to core PC and unemployment, but there is a clear decline in their perception of downside risk to growth. And I guess they have more confidence than I do in consumption. During the presser, Powell said that the consumer was doing okay. They also seem to have more confidence than I do in AI. I'm not sure that AI investment is as important to growth as people make it to be because of its high import content. And I note that at the October FOMC, Powell was a bit more dismissive of AI investment. He had a question. He replied that consumption was a bigger driver of GDP. It's true, consumption is 70% of GDP. Corporate investment is about 10-15% normally. So as always, the Fed is going to be data-driven. For them to cut in January, for instance, you would need a big move in unemployment. And by big move, let's put things in perspective. Unemployment doesn't widely jump about the place. So I'm talking, say, a 20, 30 basis point increase in unemployment between now and the January 28 FOMC is what we would need, which I don't think is likely.
Cool. So I had a couple of questions and interesting points to dig into. So the first, one of the things we've been seeing is that employment growth is sort of grinding to a halt. And I find, the projections quite interesting of a rebound next year despite that. What do you think is giving the committee the confidence that we'll still see this rebound despite employment growth sort of being roughly zero recently?
So they see employment as I see growth driven by productivity rather than employment. Powell was asked that question during the presser, and he had an interesting answer. He did not see this productivity growth as an unmitigated blessing. He saw a risk. I mean, he didn't dwell on it, but his reply meant that there was a risk that there could be some structural unemployment if workers displaced by AI couldn't find jobs elsewhere easily. That said, if you look at their prediction for unemployment, it goes down, not up next year. Which I guess is what you need to be consistent with only one cut next year, which is a median consensus.
Yeah, makes sense. And when thinking about employment growth this year, we've been on this sort of glide path lower. What do you think, from your perspective, you're looking for to perhaps, change that around? What could change it around? And is that your base case, or do you think this sort of glide path lower continues over the next few months?
So it's not my base case because the glide part in part reflects supply and immigration policies mainly, and that's unlikely to change. That said, the fact that unemployment has moved up and wage growth is slowing suggests that the demand part of the labor market, the decrease in demand has been on balance larger than the decrease in supply. So since the administration is unlikely to change its immigration policies, we are more likely to see unemployment or wage growth move. My expectation is that unemployment will continue to go up. And wage growth will continue to go down. And to be wrong, I would need to see a marked rebound in growth that, even with AI, would force businesses to hire more workers. And that's not my base case. I think there is too much uncertainty about economic policies. There have been lately a lot of articles in the newspaper, the Wall Street Journal, but also the news website, talking about how small businesses are really struggling in this environment. With policy uncertainty, higher cost, they can't find workers. Retail is small retailers are suffering. There is these uncertainties, and there is the uncertainty brought by AI, and also the need to fund the cost of AI investment. And on top of that, you have fiscal policy that's been actually quite restrictive. If you look at the 12-month budget balance, it's contracted by 1% since the administration was inaugurated in February. And of course, it's good for public finances in the long term, but in the short term, it's a negative impact on growth. The shutdown is not going to change this very much. One of the interesting pieces of information we got through the Powell's press conference was that he sees the impact of the shutdown on growth, Q4 growth, as about 20 basis points, and he expects Q1 growth to increase by 20 basis points, which is very, very different from the CBO minus 1.5% and then plus 2.2% next quarter, which in my view are widely exaggerated. So I'm not seeing a big hit to growth from the shutdown followed by a big boost. I just think that growth is depressed because of all of these factors. The biggest question mark is what happens next year. I think the administration is going to struggle to deliver a fiscal stimulus. So it's a bit of a long-winded answer, but the bottom line, no, I don't expect the glide path to reverse anytime soon.
Cool, thank you. And when you think about some of the most vocal or influential hawks on the committee, their sort of rationale for pausing here seems to be a combination of, where rates are roundabout neutral, financial conditions are loose, and then inflation is too high. Which one of those rationales do you most agree with, if any, or what do you think their best case is for pausing rates here?
So I'll start with those that I agree
Sure.
the least with, perhaps, which is inflation is too high. I mean, the Fed needs to be forward-looking in thinking about inflation. The main risk, forward risk to inflation from inflation being too high in the past, is the Fed losing its credibility. But if you look at inflation expectations, long-term BEs, they have been very stable, very consistent with 2% inflation. Financial conditions, I'm not a big believer in those. It seems to me that growth and financial conditions are jointly determined by, surprises to policy, external surprises. So I don't see one driving the other, though there is a little bit of a feedback loop between, yes, the wealth effect, more important for high incomes and low income household. But if you look at data, for instance, car purchases, it's really interesting because statistically, high income Americans spend much more on cars than low income Americans. Yet overall spending on cars is coming down, which shows that the negative impact of the bottom part of the income distribution getting squeezed is starting to offset, the spending by upper income Americans. So I don't find financial conditions very compelling as an argument for not cutting. And actually, the Fed view is that you need to see changes in extended in financial conditions for an extended period of time to have a macro impact, and that they react to those financial conditions only to the extent that they impact their inflation and employment mandate. So those I don't find very compelling reasons for staying on hold. My concern is really about growth and the risk that right now we have a very gradual increase in unemployment. But if growth gets depressed, if the administration cannot deliver an additional fiscal stimulus, for instance, we could have a very fast increase in unemployment that is typically a marker of recession.
Yeah, makes sense. And then, just a couple of points to finish on the Fed. One of the big discussions going into the meeting was about how many dissents we could see. So, Governor Moran was one we thought we'd see. And then there was a question of, how many of the hawks would vote for a hold. What was your take on how many dissents we actually got? And did that take you by surprise?
No, I wasn't sure. Like someone like Mousalem, who is a hawk, I wasn't sure he would dissent. I think he has a great deal of institutional loyalty. What was interesting is I think we had three dots that showed no high. Was it three? Actually, it was a bit. I think it was five dots that showed no hike, no cuts
No
in
cut, yeah.
yeah. So three more than the open dissent. I think in part it's because some of these people were perhaps not voting. I think in terms of providing transparency, in my view, it would be more helpful if people, if FOMC members, if voters made their dissent explicit. There's nothing wrong with dissenting. In fact, at Macro Hive, we have a policy of no house view. And
Yep.
that's the reason. The reason is because we think no one can be right all the time. So a good decision-making process allows for dissent simply. Because it gives you a broader perspective on what is going on. Sometimes, analysis, it's difficult to have strong conviction because the data is just not there. So to me, actually, more dissent is better than no dissent, and especially more open dissent.
Cool. Thank you. That's super interesting. And then just the last point to cover it off. We've got a change in the regional Fed governors who are voting next year. Do you have an initial take in how you see that shift? Is it, do you think it's neutral, net hawkish, or dovish with the changes we've seen?
I think it's broadly neutral. I'm not very sure how I would describe cash carry. For sure, Paulson is a dove. We'll see. I think the bigger change next year could be the change in Fed chair. And we still don't have a final read. I mean, the betting markets, I think, are giving 90% chance to Kevin Hassett. And the question is whether he will be able to carry the committee. And in this context, I think open dissent would actually be more helpful because it would give us a better chance of where people actually stand.
Yeah, makes sense. So outside of the Fed, what stood out for you in terms of the data we had released last week or any other sort of news releases or things like this?
The Fed really was the main thing. I mean, I think we had some what is going on in terms of politics, which I think is relevant for markets, is that we see that the administration has perhaps less influence over Congress than it did just a month ago before the November elections. We've had a string of elections which have not gone really for the Republicans, or not as much as expected. And so that's going to be a factor next year if the administration tries to deliver additional fiscal stimulus to the economy, for instance, with tariff rebates. It may find that Congress is not prepared to support it.
Cool. So that's the sort of last week. What are you looking for in the week ahead?
So the week ahead, it's we've basically have a catch up. We have NFPs, we have retail sales, we have the CPI, and these are all backwards. So what is really important going forward is to get some resolution on inconsistencies in the data. So the first inconsistency is the one mentioned by Powell between firms announcing layoff, the glide down in employment and no increase in claims. It's a bit of a mystery. A mystery, for instance, is that the administration through DOGE announced firing of 250,000 federal employees. But if you look at the NFP data, it looks like only 75,000 were fired this year. There's been only a limited increase in jobless claims. So there's a lot of data issues that hopefully will get resolved. So that's one inconsistency. The other inconsistency is what you alluded to between growth and employment. So this week we don't get any GDP, but the following week we'll get the estimate for the third quarter GDP. So we don't have a forecast yet, but unemployment in the third quarter has been more or less flat. So it will be interesting to see if that is reflected in GDP. One data that's going to be super important in the GDP is PC, so personal consumption, because we can't have no increase in employment and wages, so in wage income, and an increase in household income. So that's another inconsistency. Consumption is too strong relative to employment. So we don't have dates for the release of the consumption and income data. But once we get them, that's something else to look at. In terms of the Fed, not too many speakers next week. We will have Governor Waller, President Williams, Governor Miron, and President Bostic, but that's about it. I think everybody is getting ready for the holidays.
That's right. So is anything else I haven't asked you which you'd like to flag to clients or listeners for next week, or just
No,
things you're thinking about?
that's the gist of it. I mean, the inconsistency between claims and employment, and between consumption and employment. These are the key things going forward in terms of the economic and Fed outlook.
Yeah, excellent. Great. So with that said, we just wanted to quickly highlight some of our pieces from the last week. So we had the webinar where it was Dominic and I talking about the Fed, and then Dominic, you also talked about some of the CBO's projections on the shutdown, which I think are worth highlighting. I talked about why I think weakness in INR is likely to continue. Dominic, you also published your FOMC review, which you sort of highlighted for people today. And then, interestingly, we also had our 10 Gray Swans for 2026. So we released part one of that this week. So this is, things that are unlikely to happen, but we think could happen. So there's some interesting things there. So Bilal, for instance, spoke about how there could be not enough investment in AI and data centers rather than too much. We also had one where Farage becomes UK PM in 2026. I'm not sure about that one, but could be an interesting one to read. And then again, Bilal spoke about how he thinks Liverpool will win the league, which I think that one's probably already outdated. So if you
Should
have some time, right. So if you have some time, probably worth having a look on that as well. With that said, I think we've covered everything. Thanks, Dominique, for your time, and we look forward to catching everyone next week.
be. Thanks, Viraj.
Thanks, everyone. Cheers. Speak soon. Bye.